It's time for Retro Talk with Retro Rose here on
WXPM
on 98.5
FM.
Hi, this is Rosemary with Retro Talk, and today I've got a very talented lady that was on two of my favorite movies. One was Chopping Mall, and the other one was Night of the Comet. Can you introduce yourself for the fans?
Hi, thank you for tuning in. I'm Kelly Maroney, and like Rosemary said, and then I was also on Soaps, and I've been on some other stuff too, but those seem to be the two movies that people know.
Yeah. You've been on a lot of, and I didn't mention everything, but those are
definitely
two of my favorites. I mean, I grew up with horror movies.
I'm glad. No, those are, I'm happy with two. Most people don't even get to have one. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah.
I actually have three, if you count Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, I was, you know, and I want to mention everything you did on, but me, yeah. I went to the movie store every Friday. I went to the movies all the time, but I was a drive-in kid. And I grew up right around the same time. I was born in 71.
Mostly where people saw it, I don't know about drive-ins, but mostly where people got to know those movies was on cable. Because they bought them for very cheap on cable, and so they played them all the time.
Yeah, and Tony said that was a different name for the movie for Chopping Mall, too, at one point, right?
It was called Killbots, but that didn't really mean anything to an audience, so it wasn't popular. And so Roger said that title's not working. And legend has it, I don't know if this is true or not, but it could be. It could very well be, and it could not be. Rumor has it that they were all sitting around in the screening room saying, what are we going to call this thing? Nobody's watching it. Killbots doesn't mean anything to people. And a maintenance guy who was, you know, there screwing light bulbs and various things said, why don't you call it Chopping Mall, like as a joke?
Yeah.
And Roger goes, I like it. Let's do it. Let's move with that.
And it really took off after that.
Well, it does kind of explain how it got to be the title Chopping Mall when no one gets chopped in it. The guy didn't see the movie, you know.
Yeah.
He just saw, I don't know what he saw, probably. He saw the mall, and he probably saw some of the slasher-type stuff. He probably did. But not enough to know that there's no chopping in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that title and that artwork, sure. But it's very misleading because nobody gets chopped.
Yeah, no one gets chopped. They do get, there's some explosions, and there's laser fire, electrocutions, and everything
all
else.
All sorts of things.
Yeah. It's definitely
exploding.
One of those films.
Yeah, but no one gets chopped, which is, I guess, okay.
So going off from this, I would love to hear some of your personal memories of making that film. And then we can also talk about Night of the Comet and then talk about some of the other projects you worked on. How you first got into acting is something I would love to learn.
Okay. What do you want to start with?
Let's start off with we can do Let's do Chopping Mall since we've already spoke of that.
Okay. All right, well, I mean, that's where I met Barbara Crampton, and we became lifelong friends. And, you know, Jim Wynorski and I are kind of stuck together for life because of Chopping Mall. Who knew that it was going to be, like, more and more popular every year? I certainly didn't, and people teased me to no end that I did that movie. And I was like, what did you ruin your career for by doing a movie called Chopping Mall? And I took a lot of heat for that. It was like, well, what a dumb decision. Why did you do that? I said, well, it wasn't called Chopping Mall when I signed on for it. It was called, you know, nobody thought they were doing a movie called Chopping Mall. It was called Robot. And the guy who made Daryl Hannah's tail for Splash and was a big special effects guy was doing the effects. And it seemed like it was going to be, you know, I mean, not Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
But then it turned into Chopping Mall. There's very little control that you as an actor have over what you end up in. And also your performance, too, because you can give an Academy Award performance, but if the editor doesn't use it, and it ends up on, you know, we used to say the cutting room floor, but there's no such thing anymore, but just doesn't use that take, nobody ever sees it. So if you win an Academy Award, you thank the editor, because he's the one that, or she is the one, or them, are the ones that put it in there, because all they had to do was leave it out, and nobody would ever see it.
Yeah.
It's terrifying when you think about it.
Well, it's a cult classic now.
Yeah.
I'm sure you, that's one of the things you do get mentioned the most. One of the
it movies. Is. It is, and like more so every year, and I can't get over it. I mean, every single time we have something for Chopping Mall, we kind of all look at each other and go, how did this happen? We don't even know, you know. But I think it struck a nerve somehow. I think it's very 80s. And one thing I think, I mean, something that we had, and I think Night of the Comet has it too, that you don't find as much, and it's not as prevalent as I thought it was. It's just everybody, it's almost like family. Like nobody in Chopping Mall has an attitude problem where they can't get along with anybody except for, you know, at one point somebody's mad that I let their girlfriend and my best friend die, which is, you know, which is understandable. But it doesn't really, I mean, the frustration doesn't really, I mean, nobody's at odds with one another. We band together.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just kind of like the mental health was a little bit better, I think, back in those days.
Yeah.
Sure, I was afraid as the last person on Earth that I wasn't going to, you know, get to have a boyfriend. That's pretty serious. I would be concerned about that if it happened today. But other than that, I mean, it was about family, you know, getting it together and, you know, surviving that thing. And you know, I said, well, I always say, Night of the Comet's not a dark movie. It's like a Hallmark movie in a way. We get it together and we survive as a family.
Yep, and you survive as a family.
Mm-hmm.
On Chopping Mall, what was it like with the special effects? I mean, there's a head that explodes at one point. Did you get to watch that?
Oh, yes, and that was so stinky. I don't know. They had every kind of rotten whatever they could get from the butcher, I think, and it was so nasty. And they had to set it up right because they really only had one time to blow it up. You know, and then they could shoot around it, the parts, but there was only one time that thing could blow up, and so they really had to get it right. And so that took quite a few hours to do, and boy, did it stink. And poor Susie Slater, she had to be coming around the corner, and she couldn't really hear them tell her to go, you know. And, you know, I mean, there was finally Jim, who's like a Leo and can be a big yeller if he wants to be, goes, Susie, can you hear me? And she goes, no. And we all died laughing because, can you hear me? No. But you know, it wasn't really funny because she can't really hear him, you know, with whatever was going on with her.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know. That was, I don't think anybody realized how involved that was going to get. There's only one other head exploding thing at least in the 80s, and it was Scanners. So,
yeah.
I think it bothers Jim Wynorski, too, because they go, okay, head exploding of all time, Scanners followed closely by Chopping Mall. And he goes, what do you mean? It's just as good as Scanners.
Actually, it's one of Tony's favorite scenes. It's horrible, but my husband was like, we were watching a YouTube video the other day, and it's the kill counts for Chopping Mall. And
how many?
Did you know there was one of those?
I know of them, you know, because like Joe Bob Brin says, you know, how many deaths, how many of this, how many of that. How many was the kill count?
I think there was like 3 women and 6 guys. But I don't want to say that wrong in case someone's listening and said, hi, you said that wrong. But one that got the best award for it was the one with the exploding head, is what they said. And it's actually my husband and I crack up laughing. When, you know, when they have the credits, when it's going off, it shows everybody's face.
Yep.
And then it has the exploding head. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's, it's great. You know, it's a fun movie.
It's a callback. It's like, remember what I did, because, I mean, it was no small feat, and he pulled it off. So he just wants to remind you at the end what he did.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun, very fun movie. And it reminds me of, because when that movie came out, I was already around probably about 13, 14. I think it came out in 84, wasn't it?
86.
Well, then I would have been 15 in May that year. So I went and seen it. You know, I rented it. I didn't really actually see it in a theater, but I rented it as soon as it came out. I would hit the horror section in the video store on Friday nights after school.
Oh, sure.
And so I didn't see that one in the movie theater, but I do remember renting it as soon as it came out. I was like, oh, this looks cool, you know, so. And it was a fun movie. It still is. We watch it a lot. I just watched that one the other day, and it's something that, as soon as I mentioned to my husband, you saw the little robots, he got all excited about it and says, oh, I want one of those, you know.
They're adorable. You know, I really, this guy makes them by hand, and they're, you know, it's hard for me to get because he's got to make each one by hand. And then, like, I'll ask him to make so many, and then when he gets a chance, he makes them. And then I get them, and it's kind of, but it's worth it to me because when I got mine, I didn't realize how much I was going to enjoy having it. I thought, well, I'm going to have these available on my website because these are more fun to have than I would have thought that they are, because the arms move and the head moves, and it's just adorable sitting there. And so I'm glad that I have that.
How big are they?
Gosh, how many inches are they? Let's see. I want to say like. I should really know this. Probably like 6 inches tall, I think.
6 inches? Well, and their joints and everything moves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd love to have it if the space went, the light went on and everything, but then that would be, like, you know, cost prohibitive. So.
Now, does his head move?
Yeah. Oh, the head moves, sure.
Oh, wow.
Because that one of his features, that the head moved. That was, you know.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you if those were 3D printed or if they were custom made or.
Mine? Oh, no, yeah. They're handmade.
Oh, wow. Those are awesome.
Yeah, so I don't really actually. I mean, it's not like I'm making a lot of money off of them.
Yeah.
By the time he makes them and I get them, and it's, you know, and then I send them out or I bring them to shows.
Yeah.
But I just want, you know.
Yeah, well, they're very cool, and they're totally worth it. The reason why I was asking, sometimes when you look at the website, you can't tell entirely if its arms move or anything.
Oh, I know. I should probably be more specific. It'd be better if I had a little video on there so you could actually see. I was working on how to. Actually, I'm always working on my website, but I really need to be working on it more, and I'm doing that, so. Maybe a video would be better because I could show that it moves and stuff.
Yeah.
One thing to say, people don't necessarily read the copy on a website anymore, so I could say it. I don't know if people would read it.
Well, I'll definitely, this is not only going to air on the radio, this is going to be on a podcast. So I'll have an episode podcast for this, and we'll put down the link for your website on it too, so people know about your website. And I'll have you actually mention, if you want to, you can mention it now, but we'll mention it at the end too, if you'd like to mention your website and everything.
Oh, sure. It's just myname.com. And all you have to do is spell my name right, which is not as easy as it sounds because my name has been spelled wrong in plenty of credits before. Because it's Gaelic, it's Irish, so it's K-E-L-L-I-M-A-R-O-N-E-Y, the Irish version, and people tend to think it's the Italian version, but it's not, it's Irish. So just Kelly with an I, Maroney, MARONEY.com, and then /store will take you right to that page.
And it's a cheerleading production one, too, isn't it?
Badass cheerleader production.
Yeah. It seems like, well, at least in two movies, you played cheerleaders.
Well, yeah, and I can't get away from it. And I mean, I did an interview with Ileana Douglas one time, and she said, didn't anybody tell you that that's a bad idea to play two cheerleaders in a row? I said, no, nobody said a word. I mean, nobody raised me. I just grew.
Can you share your thoughts about being a cheerleader twice?
Well, I wasn't a cheerleader type in school. I mean, I left when I was a teenager, and I went to New York first, and I was always playing the juvenile delinquent, you know? I had like a Jodie Foster vibe or something. Then I get out to California, and they see me as a cheerleader. I'm thinking, what's wrong with this coast? How can I be so different, perceived so differently on one coast from another? You know, they think I'm a juvenile delinquent. I get out to California, and they think I'm a cheerleader. How does that happen?
Yeah. But
it did. And now, looking back, I see what they were seeing because I was so enthusiastic. You know.
Yeah, you have the energy there.
Enthusiasm. And I didn't realize it was coming off that way, but now obviously I do. But the reason that happened was because it's natural. It's like, you know, when Tom Everhart was casting it, he said, you know, somebody annoying like that, that cheerleader in Fast Times. And I said, we actually have that cheerleader in Fast Times. So I mean, the one thing begets another. Work begets work, and especially when you're starting out, you have to fit some sort of a. I used to never believe this, because actors want to be, and we are, most of us are really, really versatile and can play a lot of different things. But nobody knows what to do with that, and the confused mind always says no. So they don't want to hear she can do anything. That doesn't tell them anything. So that confused mind will say, no, let me get something I know what it is. And so that's why, especially early on, you have to suffer through a lot of typecasting, because that's how you get work.
Yeah.
And then if you're lucky, then you can get to a point where people will put up with you if you want to do something different. They won't necessarily like it, but they'll put up with it.
And it gives you a chance to do other things.
Yeah, they'll give you a chance. But they just assume you do what they expect you to do. And it's just because if you walk into a store and you don't know exactly what something is, you don't want to hear about the potential of it. You go, I don't know what that is, and you walk past it.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for a Barbie doll, you go to the Barbie section, you buy yourself a Barbie doll, end of story. And it's just a sale. It's a sale thing.
Yeah, don't get me started on Barbies. I never sent you any pictures, but I'm a huge Barbie collector.
Oh, I must have picked up on that.
I collect them from the 1960s on up through the 90s, and I'll probably end up showing you some pictures.
Yeah. Now. Well, what did you think of the movie?
I actually liked it. I liked it more for the references to the Barbies I liked, but I thought it was a fun movie, too. I thought it was fun. But I loved all the references and knew which dolls they were talking about with each reference. So it
was. Yeah, that means you're a real Barbie person. I think they tried to gear it so if you didn't know that much about Barbie, you could still follow it. But I was just wondering, somebody who's like a real Barbie aficionado, what those, you know, what they heart did. Real knowledgeable people thought about it.
Yeah, I wasn't disappointed. I'll say that I enjoyed it. I own it. I bought the DVD of it. My husband really won't watch it. He's not into Barbie as much.
Oh, my God, though, you don't have to be into Barbie to enjoy the movie. It's really funny.
Yeah. Did you watch that? You liked the movie, too, then?
Well, sure. I mean, the fact that they put her feet like that.
I know. Do you have Barbies yourself?
Oh, I had Barbies. I mean, I don't know of any. I can't think of anybody that I knew that didn't want a Barbie or have a Barbie. The feet always disturbed me. I would just stare at the feet when I was little. I don't know. So when I saw that in the movie, it just thrilled me because, yeah, the feet are an issue with me.
Yeah.
Permanently in high heels. Yeah, and I guess I'm not the only one because they did make a point of it. And there was the one my mother brought home, and I guess it was a midge. It didn't really take off. I said, what is that? I had no idea who it was. You know, and poor Ken, you know, nobody saw any reason for me to get a Ken doll, so I never had one. But my Barbie thing was only like maybe a year, and I was kind of over it because all this stuff came out. And I think it was my mom, too. She's like, what is this with the dream houses and all the clothes? And this is this is a money trap.
Yeah, it definitely is when you think about all the fashions. I have some of the early ones from like 1961, 62, and the price for the Barbie was only $2-something. It was $2.90-something, and then you had to buy all the outfits individually, which cost like maybe $3 a piece, you know, and it adds up.
Yeah, I don't think my mom pushed it too hard when she realized, oh, dear, this is going to be buying one thing after another. So I think she just let me, when I stopped being interested, she just let it go. It's like, good. But I know some people were just way more fascinated with it than I was. But again, I found the feet disturbing.
I'm going to show you. I'm going to bring some of my goodies to the convention and show them to you when we're there. I want to mention, before we go to Night of the Comet, I want to mention some more on these Killbots. Can you tell fans what it was like a little bit to have to deal with the robots? Now, they didn't go very fast, right?
And running. I didn't think so. There's various accounts, and I don't know how much gets embellished over the years, or maybe it's things that I didn't know at the time even. But in my mind, that Killbot never went 8 miles an hour, ever. I mean, it was on a dolly, and I would have to pretend to run really fast because a dolly is kind of like railroad tracks, and it can only go so far, and the cameraman is on those railroad tracks following you, and so that it looks like he's the Killbot's point of view. And so I'd have to look like I was running as fast as I could, but still not outrun him. And I'd already learned that on the Zero Boys, thank goodness, because, boy, he would have been mad at me. I mean, they get really mad. It's like, well, what good does it do? I lost her. You know, I don't need to know she can run that fast. I know she could probably run that fast. I'm trying to get a shot here. But they were on the dolly, and they were all remote control. And sometimes, you know, that was really clunky. You know, we lost control of it. It's like, where is it going, and why is it wobbling? And, I mean, they really were very scary. There weren't three robots that were all put together. There was one that had that thing that came out, like looked like it was grabbing you with putty. Mm-hmm. And but they were not three sovereign Killbots that were all put together. And you know, then we had the head and we had the arms, which I think is quite festive, that little Olay thing it does. let's see, what else?
There was parts then, basically.
Oh, there were only parts, yeah. Yeah, and we shot that separately. So we knew what we were reacting to, but we didn't necessarily see it happen. Because it involved shooting it, which is a different thing. It's like, you know, okay, can we get the pinchers to go? I didn't catch that. We got to shoot that again. So, yeah, not scary at all to shoot.
Now, here's a question.
I think it does look like they're going fast.
Yeah, it does. And if it showed the whole body, like you said they were like on a dolly. If it showed like the whole body, like there's a scene where one of them gets electrocuted and that's all remote control. They don't really move very much when they're just standing and it shows the whole body then.
If you could get it so that it didn't, if you could get a direct line and push it as hard as you could make it look fast. And I don't know if they sped it up or not. I don't think that they did stuff like that back in the day. Today, they, you know, no question, speed it up. But I think it just looked that fast. I think that they did a great job with it.
Yeah.
I mean, totally practical effects, except for those lasers. And Jim Wynorski and Steve Mitchell fought Roger Corman so hard on those lasers because they're cheap now, but back in the day to put those lasers in a movie was so expensive. And, you know, Roger lives up to his reputation, that whole studio. They didn't spend a penny. They didn't have to. And he was begging because one or two lasers looks pretty lame. He said, I got to have more lasers. I just got to have more lasers. And so he had to go to on the mat several times trying to get those lasers, and they were expensive at the time.
Yeah.
So it's funny, you look back now and you think, now that's nothing, but back in the day. And, you know, nobody that worked for Roger wanted to argue with him ever. So for him to have to do that, it was a big deal for him. It was important because otherwise he wouldn't have. He would have just done what Roger said. That's what most people did. Nobody wanted to lock horns with Roger at all.
Well,
so that was, And I think that he also thought he was doing this big homage of all Roger's movies, like Little Shop of Pets and, Peckinpah's. Well, The Little Shop of Pets was, from Little Shop of Horrors and stuff. So all these little mini homages, like Attack of the Crab Monsters, and come to find out, Roger Corman hated that. He hated when you brought up his other movies. I don't think Wynorski knew that.
No.
He's doing nothing but bringing up Roger's movies. And Roger didn't care for that much. Who knows? I mean, I'm sure on some level, I'm sure as time went by, he appreciated it more. But, in 1986, it didn't matter. You know how things are.
Yeah.
Like, something that you don't realize the importance the compliment that you're receiving when you're young, when you're doing something. And then you get to be, in your 80s, you look back and you realize that showed a lot of caring, or you realized you were loved, or you realized that it was important, and you understand what was happening. But
yeah.
At the time, maybe you didn't appreciate it. But I don't know. Because he didn't really share anything with us. It was more like in the editing process that I hear stories of what went on. And then throughout the years I've gleaned, because I never tried to produce a movie or anything like that. That's when you really get to know him. I never really had personal conversations with Roger at all. Except for, hi, how are you? Let's take a picture. Those kind of things.
How about Night of the Comet then? With the director and with the way the film went and everything.
Well, that was that was a whole different scene. And those characters were, it wasn't so much about running away from.
You weren't running
so
away from zombies a little bit.
Yeah, but it was more about how people dealt with them, with people, no one being around and all of a sudden.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your neighbor's a zombie and you don't know why, those kind of things. It was more about the people. So the characters were more developed because it wasn't so much about let's run away from this thing as it was how do we cope with what's happened to us.
Yeah, with everybody gone. And I mean, when you first watch Night of the Comet and Samantha's at home making cereal and talking about the squad, cheerleading squad and everything, it almost seems like, either there's a little bit of denial there or,
Oh, she knows. I play it. She knows. She just, the reason she keeps talking is that if she stops talking for 1 second, her sister's going to tell her nobody's here anymore. She knows.
Yeah.
She knows.
She doesn't want to.
Yes. I played Samantha. She knows the whole time. She just doesn't want to believe it. I mean, if somebody told me, hey, guess what, Kelly? You know what? No one's around. First of all, that's ridiculous. And second of all, I would think that's not true. And I'm going to we will all go through that human process of that can't be true. That's ridiculous. That's very just. It's like the most frightening thing I've ever heard. So it can't be true. It looks true. I'm just going to wait and find out that it's not true before I get all upset. And then finally, Samantha admits on the cop car that she knows it's true.
Yeah, and you know what? I will tell you, when I first watched that and I rented it, when it comes to Chopping Mall, that's one thing. But when I watched that movie, it just seemed like Night of the Comet could be something that was almost real, what happens if everybody disappeared? How would you react? How would you respond? I mean, I think anyone would go through a breakdown. What's going on?
Absolutely. I mean, when we had our pandemic here and everyone was in quarantine, I can't tell you the number of people. And also, every time we have fire season here and the sky goes orange, people send me pictures. This is my backyard, it's Night of the Comet. Or look at this street, it's Night of the Comet. Because it doesn't take much to make the world look like that, actually. I mean, It's like, look at my sky. It looks just like Night of the Comet. Or look at these roads. It looks just like my... I mean, they're always sending me that stuff. And then also, and it is remarkable, too. Boy, that was a red filter that we used. But that's all it was a red filter on the camera.
Yeah.
And it just... I mean, the special effects that we got, the practical effects that we got out of that movie with very little, is astonishing, actually. The production designer and the cinematographer were on fire. I mean, for some reason, they just, I don't know how they did it, but they really sold that. And we didn't have much, I mean, without any fancy stuff. But the AI thing now, too, with Chopping Mall, people write to me almost every day, look, it's happening. Look, it's happening in some of these stories about AI.
Yeah.
Specialists. And I always say, well, I tried to tell you, nobody listens.
You know, Night of the Comet, though, you wouldn't really have to have, I mean, there's a few zombies, but there wasn't really anything that seemed like it's more like, have you ever watched the movie The Birds?
Oh, yeah.
From the 1960s. It's more the story. That's what Night of the Comet is. It's like you were mentioning earlier, it's what the girls are going through, what everybody is going through right now. This is more of an emotional story of what's going on, how these people are reacting. So it's not as much frightening as how much it could be real. I just watched that movie the day after last night.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, that's what it is. It's the scary part of it. It's what could actually... You know, you don't want it to ever happen, but it's something that you can't blanket out of your mind, like, oh, you know, and when COVID did first happen, when it first came out and people were talking about it, I was terrified. I washed my hands. I couldn't go out of the house without worrying about it, you know, so it's the same way with Night of the Comet. You know, you think about, you know, I don't think there would ever be a comet that would fly by that would kill half the, you know, like they say with the dinosaurs and everything. I would hope not, but it's just something that as a kid, as a teenager, this was like, this is pretty intense, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that actually came from, there is a theory that could happen, actually. That didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's why that guy looked so much like Mark Twain in the beginning. They got somebody to look like Mark Twain. Last time this happened, the dinosaurs disappeared.
Yeah, and there's a scene that Catherine Mary Stewart is in that she's playing an arcade game in the movie, you know, where she's in a movie theater, and you know how she's got her initials all the way down it? My husband's a big arcade fan, and he goes to this hot dog shop near us that has arcades there, and if you go into where the Pac-Man and the certain games are in that arcade there, his initials are all the way down it. He is an overachiever. Uh-huh. I'll have to show you an image when you come out.
Well, that's a real thing, and a lot of people did do that. And it also is a great, because subconsciously when you see that, you understand a lot about the way Reggie's mind is going to work.
Yeah.
It's a very, very big character tip-off right there, the fact that she's doing that. So without too much further explanation, you know who that character is.
Yeah.
By the way, she's doing that.
And you can tell the connection between the sisters, too, even with the stepmother, how you guys, she said you share everything. It just goes to show you guys are very close.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it was us against the world. And also, Samantha's got some anxiety about her growing up and moving away. And that's a real thing. People in dysfunctional families, people have told me, you know, I will never forget when my older brother went to college and he left me in that house by myself, just his record collection, and there was nobody else but me trying to deal with my crazy family.
Yeah.
And they feel very abandoned, and then Samantha's got some of that going on too, which is why she's always trying to get a rise out of Reggie.
Yeah. Just like
I want your attention. I don't care if it's negative.
Yeah. Tony was just mentioning that the other day. Said we were doing something, and he says, "What was it? How's that line go?" And Dad would have gotten us Uzis or something like that. If I'm saying it correctly.
Daddy would have got Uzis. Yeah. People have told me that to this day in their family, if they find something underwhelming, like they, their catchphrase for it is, "What Daddy would have gotten with Uzis."
I'll have to have you write that whenever I do see you. I don't want to date this video, but whenever I do see you at some point, I want to have you sign that for Tony on that Daddy Would Have Gotten Us Uzis. Tony would love it.
I always write whatever you want, but that seems to be the one people want. And you know why? Because that happened. That was a real thing that happened, and I think people pick up on it. Because we got Mach 10s because Atlantic Releasing did not want to spring for Uzis because they were too expensive. So they sent us Mach 10s without telling him. He was so disappointed and so frustrated, and he just said, "These are going to jam every single bit. Boy, if you think you're going to bring this movie in on time with Mach 10s, you're crazy, because every single, and sure enough, every single time we had to work with those guns, they would jam. They would blow a take. They would, you know, this, that."
So that wasn't just acting. That really did happen. It was jamming.
Yeah, so this one day he couldn't stand it anymore. It was that day. And he said, "All right, this time I'm not going to cut. When it happens, and we all know it will, I'm not going to cut. I just want you to continue to try to make it work. And then I want you to say something." I said, "Well, I'm not going to get in trouble. So tell me what you want me to say." So he goes, and he told me, "This is the problem with these things," which is what he meant.
Yeah,
and because he was Daddy, because he was the picture in our, and he was a very fatherly figure towards us anyway too. But he was the picture. There's young Samantha, young Reggie, and there's a guy in a military uniform. That's Tom. So he was Daddy for this, all intents and purposes. He said, "Daddy would have gotten us Uzis," and then just walk off. And because it had really happened. And also, I was a little afraid to say it, but we were all so frustrated that I didn't, you know, it's fine as long as I didn't get in trouble for it. It was just true. He said, and then just walk off disgusted. And Catherine's kind of like, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" I'm standing here, and he goes, "I don't know. The car didn't know the difference. It's still all messed up." So, but that was created on the spot out of our sheer frustration that those things jam.
Yeah, and
people, I think, know that. But on some level, they can feel like that really happened.
Yeah, and the car didn't know the difference. Mm. Hey, can you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
Since this is going to actually air on the radio, I don't know if you remember some of the lines from when you were at your Sam's actually playing, and you guys are in a state, you're in a radio station, and you're saying about schools out, you know, about the exams and everything. I can't remember it word for word, but do you remember a lot of it? Can you say it for us on here?
Because I always have to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was an honor for me, because when Tom was in college, he was a DJ, and he saw almost before anybody else how the music system was dying. And that it was all going to be automated. And a lot of the things that I did were protestations about, hey, wait a second, everything's getting automated. Everything's AI. It's a funny thing because it keeps coming up in almost everything I do. But he hated that canned music thing. And I remember him at the time when nobody knew it yet. He said, musicians are not going to be able to make a living anymore. They're killing the music industry. And, you know, it's kind of right. The only way they can make money anymore is to go on tour where they're live. Because, well, you know what happened to the music industry.
Yeah.
It's very hard to make a living doing it now. Not like it used to be. But many bands have said, if we were trying to break through now, nobody would be interested in us. We never would have existed. Anyway, so it was an honor for me that I got to be the person to do that. And, of course, I'd be the one, like, you know, messing around back there.
Yeah.
So it just fits. So I said, and he, you know, people say, "Did you, like," and it was just that Tom and I got in sync. We all of us got in sync. And that's the way that movie is written, is the way Tom talks. It's just much, much like Woody Allen. You know how you see a Woody Allen movie and everybody talks like Woody Allen?
Yeah.
It's very much the same thing. So he would just give me something to say, and I would say it. And it does kind of sound sometimes like I made it up, but I didn't. So anyway, I say, let's see, put my gum down and I go, testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Is anybody there? And then you come back and I go, and some of you guys had finals last night? Forget it. They're history. They're canceled. The legal drinking age is now 10, but you will need ID. Let's be real. I'll be taking requests from all you teenage comet zombies on the hit line. 555-HITS. Get it?
That's great. Kelly, we're nearing the end of this interview, but before we end, I want you to tell more of your website and how people can find you online.
Oh, sure. Thank you. I have a website, and it's kellymaroney.com. I'm going to spell my name for you because it's Irish. The reason I was supposed to be Kelly John because my parents were older when I was born, and they thought, a boy would fare better off in the world. And so I came out a girl. And so my mother said, at least tack an I on the end. So she's somewhat feminine. So it's Kelly Maroney, Maroney, the Gaelic version, the Irish. It's not the Italian version. KellyMaroney.com. If you want to go to the store, it's /store. If you want to go to pictures, it's, you'll see when you get up there, there's tabs. And then if you want to visit me on Instagram, it's my name again, Kelly Maroney. If you want to visit me on Twitter, X, formerly Twitter, again, my name. If you want to visit me on Facebook, it's my name. And then I also have Actress Kelly Maroney, which is my page. And I have a special fan club called the Official Kelly Maroney Facebook group.
I'll have to look for that, too. I am following your actress page. I didn't know if you had, like, an official page or not, or if,
That's the one. I was going to phase out the very first one that I made when we all just were discovering Facebook, but I can't get anybody to move over to it, and I just don't want to. It's going to be a disaster if I just shut that thing down, so it's there because that's what people, but it's actually, I'm probably on Actress Kelly Maroney a lot more. But I think it's just, and plus, this whole thing with Facebook, they make you freeze at 5,000 people. So,
do they?
You can only have 5,000 people and on a personal account like that. So I'm always full, and until somebody like leaves Facebook or something, and then I'll have like one or two spots open. So I try to get people over because I make sure I post all the same things so you're not missing anything on that Actress Kelly Maroney page and on the Facebook group. You're not missing anything. In fact, some things I just post there and I don't bother posting it on the original page that I had that just says Kelly Maroney on it.
I'm going to share that out too then. I'm going to share out your Facebook. I'm going to share out your Instagram. Make sure I share everything out whenever I do this. But, definitely, whenever I announce the episode, when we do the episode, I'll tag you on Facebook with it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll send you a link. And I'll send you my Facebook if you want to see it. But
yes.
I'm a nerd.
Are we friends on there?
I'm not sure. I can send you a text over. I'm going to send you some of my Barbies, too, after the show's over and after I head out for the evening. I'll send you some pictures of my Barbies later. I'm such a geek. I have some friends holding some for me too for the upcoming event, and I'll have to bring them down and show you how much of a geek I am.
Well, we're all. I mean, this whole part of the genre attracts a lot of people who feel like geeks are outsiders, and we're not.
Yeah,
we're really not. But we found each other, and that's why it's a community unlike any other. It's really warm and really personal, and we get right down to sharing real stuff with each other. Not like, I mean, if we were a comedy genre club or anything, probably we'd never get personal, too personal with each other. But because we're a bunch of people, like I'm the only person in my class that watch horror movies or like whatever, or People make fun of music because I'm into comics, whatever it was at the time. You got a whole room full of people who are your people.
Yeah.
And it's just there's something about that warmth and acceptance, and it just heals so many things that people walk around kind of, you know, still wounded by things that might have happened in their childhood, and it's a place to heal.
Yeah. Kelly, I can't thank you enough for being on this. And
it's my pleasure, of course.
I will talk to you again sometime soon.
Okay, well, I hope you got everything that you needed.
I did. Oh, you're amazing. I love you.
No problem.
Thanks again, Kelly, for joining us. And now, with the ending of Retro Talk for this session, keep listening for next week.
Sponsor Retro Talk, where your support keeps us on the air. If you want more information, send an email to wxpm985@gmail.com and we'll send you our brochure.
You've been listening to
Retro Talk with Retro Rose
here on
985 WXPM.
Be back next week, same time, same channel.
Music? Remember the movies? Remember the cars, the fashions, the news, the things that stood out during our youth? It's okay to be nerdy. Join me as I reminisce over the cartoons, the toys, and the video games of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Turn back the clock with Retro Talk.
Weekends on 98.5 XPM's Million Dollar Weekend Lineup.